Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shirtliff. This show is heard on WBCQ The Planet every Monday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's also heard on IPMNation.org, which is a Concord, New Hampshire-based online media source, and that's Saturdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you could find us on YouTube. We upload most of the shows, convert to YouTube video. And our YouTube channel is simply Camp Constitution. And I'd like to report we're getting about 1,400 views a day, up considerably from like the last 6 or 7 months. We're very pleased about that. Also, Podomatic.com. We have a page on that, and you'll get not just this one, but some archived radio shows, as well as some real great presentations from the past. People like Ed Griffin and Gary Allen, of the Nundericella conspiracy fame, and some other great presentations. So anyway, it's brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp. And next year's camp is going to be in the Berkshires of Massachusetts from August 5th to the 11th. And we've got quite a lineup of instructors already, guest instructors, including Professor Willie Soon, Lord Christopher Monckton, Dr. Duke Pesta, and who else was there? There was a few others there. Anyway, we'll have many others, but that's just Chris Ann Hall, who's returning. She wasn't at this year's camp, but she'll be there next year. All right, well, we have on the line here a special guest, Ed Nail. And I've known Ed for a number of years, and he's with a number of groups up in New Hampshire. But I would say, Ed, that you are probably – you probably won't admit to this, but you're probably one of the nation's top experts on election fraud. So why don't you just introduce yourself to the millions of listeners around the world, and let's talk about whether or not there's such a thing as election fraud. We were told by all of the fake news, CNN, that it's almost impossible.
Well, thanks for having me on, Hal. I'm chairman of the Coalition of New Hampshire Taxpayers, and in the year 2000, we had decided to sit down, the board of directors, with anybody from New Hampshire who had proof of voter fraud, because we'd heard so much about it in that 2000 election. And, you know, most of us had worked campaigns, and we worked on recounts and elections, and you meet candidates all the time. There's 400 state reps here and 235 towns. Each town has a board of selectmen. There's usually three. When you walk down the street in Concord, New Hampshire, you pass people who have been on boards or been elected, or, you know, every other person has done something, you know. It's hard to not bump into somebody who's been elected to something. So,
well, you know,
speak that language.
Interesting, Ed. Living in New Hampshire, going to New Hampshire a lot, I think I know more state legislators in New Hampshire, some of them are friends, some of them are, you know, friendly acquaintances, than I know in my own state house and living in Boston. It's really interesting.
Yeah, we have 400 members of the House, and every 2 years, a third of them change. So it's constantly revolving, and everybody gets a chance to, or was stuck being state rep or something. So when we heard all about all this voter fraud, and the presidential election was close, and Florida made the case, we decided let's look around. So we said, okay, fine, bring in what you have. And some people brought stuff in, and other people, well, I think they were just sore losers. But we had a lady from Deerfield gave us the envelopes that were returned from a busload of out-of-state voters that voted in her town. So that's the first thing we caught right off the bat. We caught a busload of out-of-state voters voting in the town of Deerfield. And they voted from an imaginary address, 159 Bearbrook Road. There's no Bearbrook Road in the town of Deerfield, so there's
and
no
Deerfield 159. Deerfield is in central New Hampshire.
Yeah, southern central. It's a pretty good-sized town, but it has a big park, Bearbrook Park, in it. The address was made to look like it was in Bearbrook Park. And so I think that originally there might have been 20-some people that used that single address. And election official gave us the returned envelopes. They were from 1996, and they were purging their list, and these bounced back all with the same address. They turned them over to the AG. The AG didn't do anything. They tried to have something done with it, and no officials would handle it. So they gave it to us in 2000, 4 years after it happened. So we actually had a handful of voter fraud, right, you know, the very first thing we catch. So we said, let's just red flag what we can find and document. Now, in the other states I work with, and you almost name one, they do a lot of statistical analysis. like in New Hampshire right now, the statistical analysis we have is pretty caveman. There's 1.3 million people live in New Hampshire, and about 200,000 of them are in the public schools or less. So there's like 1.1 million people in the state of New Hampshire, but we have 990 some thousand registered voters. So it's hard to believe there's that many registered voters when you know people that don't vote never been
right.
registered. And the law says that we have to purge our list every 10 years. So it's ripe for fraud. We had a situation back in, I think Judd Gregg was still our senator, and we got a waiver from the motor voter law in 1992, I think it was passed. We got a waiver from that because we had same-day voter registration, which, once you see how it works, is basically same-day voter fraud. Anyone can walk up, say there's somebody, vote, leave. You're never going to catch them.
And
so
when did New Hampshire become a same-day voter registration? When did that happen?
That was back in the 90s.
How many states have a similar? I think California does. How many states have same-day registration?
I'm not sure how many. Some states I have nothing from. Other states, I have friends there. I can call them up, and they can check names and voter histories for me. But most of the states have motor voter, and the activists in most states are trying to get same-day voter registration. They would love to have that because it's just ghost voters. Thousands and thousands of people can vote, and you never find out who they are. That's what we pretty much have now here in New Hampshire. A year ago, our Secretary of State joined the Interstate Cross-Check Program, which is run out of Kansas. I think it's Kansas. And the Kansas Secretary of State takes your voter list and matches it with the other states that provide him with a list. So our Secretary of State gave our statewide voter database to the Secretary of State of Kansas, and he found, and there's only 24 states that are involved in this. Of the 23 other states, they found 96,410, I think, people registered in our state and one or more states. So this is all secret information. Our statewide database isn't open to the public. You have to purchase it if you're qualified, which means you have to be a candidate for statewide office or a recognized PAC. So, or a party. Like, I'm not a party. I'm just Ed Nail. So I can't get the statewide database to check. So I have to go hand-to-hand combat. When I find someone who's voting here from North Carolina, I have friends in North Carolina, and they'll dig up their information on me. Or in California, I can have someone look it up. I have emailed to me every month the updated statewide voter database from the state of Vermont, which is right next door. So it's very handy for college students from Vermont that go to school here. In fact, I just received one the other day. It comes through as let's see if I can pull it up. But anyway, Lanoy Adams, October 2017, and I'll pull it up. And it says requesters of the Vermont statewide checklist. Lanoy Adams, elections administrator, statewide checklist, and here you are, Mr. Nail. So every single voter and some voter history is in that, and it's emailed to me, but I can't get my own states. So
that's amazing.
We pursue these out-of-state voters through tips, and then we find when people come here to campaign, groups of them will rent houses or rent apartments or stay with other activists. So we keep checking those locations for people who shouldn't be voting there.
Now, New Hampshire is the first presidential primary
right.
in the country. And
right.
I know that you've got people a year before the primary that travel throughout the state. And I know where people will move in. And, either Republicans or Democrats or whatever, they'd come and actually live in New Hampshire for that cycle, or maybe a year or six months prior to the election.
Yeah, they come in about 8 months. A year to 8 months is when the organizers, the data collectors, the people who manage lists and go door to door and manage groups. Like, you'll look at their accomplishments on LinkedIn. It'll say, I ran an office in Laconia for Bernie Sanders. We knocked on 15,000 doors. We made 3,000 phone calls. We did this and did that, and then. When you look further on in LinkedIn, you'll see that they were in Delaware or they were in California or they were in Iowa or something like that. They travel all over the place, and they come here and they never get a driver's license. They're not residents. They stay with somebody, or let's say we found a nest. We call a nest when we find groups of them. At 1200 Elm Street in Manchester, they had multiple apartments. So you look at who's voting from the apartment, and you find two guys with two different names, or three people with three different names. So we do a background search, and you'll find out, oh, this lawyer's from California, that lawyer's from Illinois, and that lawyer's from D.C. Three male lawyers staying in a hotel, and they're registered to vote. And you go, oh, okay, they're working for some candidate, and they've worked for candidates in the past, or they've been candidates. So that's when we start, you know, nailing down who they are, and then you see if you can get their voter history from their own town and their own state. So that's
and many times they're voting.
Up.
In many cases, they're voting in more than one election. I think you were mentioning what you was. I heard you speak recently where there was somebody that voted in Florida, and then he somehow made his way up to Massachusetts or New Hampshire and voted in New Hampshire as well.
That was a really good catch we had this November 8th, and we're looking for samples. You know, this guy. His name is Michael LaShawn Lewis, and he's from Miami Beach, Florida. And he voted there early, let's say October 12th. He voted in Florida, and October 11th, or a day or so before, he voted in Atlanta, Georgia. And then on November 8th, he was here in New Hampshire, and he said when he got arrested, he said he flew here to Manchester and rented a car. But when he voted, he used his Florida driver's license number, not the driver's license itself. So our question is, you know, how did you get a rental car or fly here without the driver's license itself? Because we think that he's got someone else's driver's license. He didn't want to show the picture.
Obviously, it seems to be a lot of work to cast one vote, you see.
Well, these are organizers. These people travel all over the country. We have one of our most famous catches is somebody who got arrested. Once they're arrested, then there's a police record, and we can track them down. We get birth dates and where they come from and their past criminal records. But we have a guy named Carl Robert Gibson. And he came here multiple times to campaign in New Hampshire against Frank Ginta, one of our congressmen. And he got arrested in 2015. He came here to work for Bernie Sanders. While he was here, he had an apartment in Concord, which he ran his little like a blog site out of. He also had a home or an apartment in Madison, Wisconsin. His driver's license was from Kentucky. His car was registered in Connecticut. And he was registered to vote in all these different places. He's been arrested for disturbing the peace, refusing to obey an officer in about five different states. So he is basically what you call Antifa. He goes around and causes trouble. Well, he came here and he pretended to be a young lady named Yvonne Dean Bailey, who was running in a special election like in May or June. So he got a Twitter account or something, and it almost looked like hers. So he made a Twitter press release to some of the news media in New Hampshire saying, oh, I'm Yvonne Dean Bailey. I'm dropping out of the race on like Thursday before the Tuesday election. That would have a low turnout, and his Democrat left-wing candidate would win. That was the game plan. Well, the fool, when he came here as a prank, and as we get closer to catching these guys, more and more of them, when they come here, register as Republicans, thinking we're not going to spot them. I think when the AG saw a Republican making Frank phone calls, pretending to be a candidate, they ran out and arrested him, but didn't really take any evidence. They didn't take his computer. They didn't take his phone. They didn't take statements. What they had was a reporter from the Concord Monitor caught on to this fake email address and actually called Carl up. And when he found he was caught, he just admitted, well, I had a few drinks. I was just goofing around with a phone and blah, blah, blah. So he got arrested. I went to his court, a couple of his hearings, and he just lost an opportunity to have his case thrown out. The Supreme Court ruled against him. So it looks like he's going to have a full-blown trial here in New Hampshire. We'll find out more about him then. But I stopped going to his court case. If they're going to handle that, I don't have to stalk him anymore or follow him or get any more information. But when you catch a guy, like, you find out we think he was paid by Credo PAC, which is a left-wing PAC out of San Francisco. What we're trying to do at the Coalition of New Hampshire Taxpayers is not just catch, like we caught a little old lady. She's probably, I think she's 78, and she's been voting in New Hampshire for some time. And she's never missed an election since, I think, 1998 in Pinellas Park, Florida, where she lives or stays part-time. So I caught her because Rich Gerard from Gerard at Large Talk Radio ran for school board in Manchester, and he had 30 returned envelopes. So he hands me the 30 envelopes, and I started doing a background search, and boom, I got Louise Ann Fontaine out of Pinellas Park. So how do I know it's her? Well, the owner of the property in Pinellas Park is the same owner as the place she votes from in Manchester. same phone numbers. So I don't need a social security number. I have the birth date and phone number. I mean, if I call that number, I'm going to get Louise Ann Fontaine either in Florida or in New Hampshire. So she's a 70-some-year-old woman. She's stealing a vote. I'm after the organizers, the data collectors, the professionals that run these campaigns and run, they help candidates. So you hire this outfit from some firm to help you run your campaign, and they come up here and they steal votes, they cause trouble, and they leave behind their names on the checklist. They never take them off. So we caught a woman a couple years ago named Caitlin Ann Legacki. And she was working for Claire McCaskill in Missouri in 2012. She was U.S. Senator Claire McCaskill's spokeswoman in her race for U.S. Senate in Missouri. And she voted there, and she's on YouTube saying, hey, I'm here at Claire McCaskill's victory party, blah, blah, blah. Well, her name is checked off in Manchester, New Hampshire as well.
Wow.
So she was at that voter fraud nest. So she was at 1200 Elm Street with hundreds of other activists from other states. So we go, aha, you know, we got the documents. Well, Caitlin Ann Legacki had her name in New Hampshire at 1200 Elm Street because she was here in 2008 working for Jean Shaheen. In 2010, she was working for a U.S. Senator in North Carolina, where I have friends. So we know that she was voted, registered to vote, we think, in Alaska. We know in New Hampshire. We know in North Carolina. And we know in Missouri. So as these activists travel around the states, different states, they leave behind their name. So all I have to do is call and say, hey, have somebody walk in New Hampshire and vote in my name. It'll be 1200 Elm. You don't have to show ID or anything. Anything you do show in New Hampshire is all secret, not open to public review. We've stripped almost every, the legislature has taken almost everything out, or the Secretary of State, of that we use to catch out-of-state voters. It's gotten down to the last few remaining documents.
Now, let me ask you, you give me some names of people and some of their affiliations. It sounds like, with very few exceptions, they're people on the Democrat left-wing side of the spectrum.
Yeah, we have some Republicans who got caught. What happened was, when we started to do this, it triggered the Democrats, got angry, and they started going to each congressman and senators and elected officials in New Hampshire and looking at their relatives and their families, trying to find them committing voter fraud. We didn't do that. We take tips. So whatever we have is, you know, when Michael LaShawn Lewis got arrested in Hooksett for rifling through vehicles after he voted, that's how we caught him. We didn't say, oh, let's go find somebody's brother or sister or friend. So, and we caught a state senator, Martha Fuller Clark, had, I think, 8 people staying at her home in Portsmouth. Well, it's not an apartment house. It's a home in the historic district. It's a single-family home. You shouldn't be letting 8 people from out of state live at your home, you know, unless you got some sort of a variance. Normal people would. In 2005, we caught a guy from South Dakota named Jeff Witrowski. He was here running. He was trying to help out John Kerry. So I think John Kerry paid him to come to Manchester in 2005 and help then-Mayor Baines get reelected. And what he did was, he was running around during the election pulling up Republican signs and putting them in his trunk. And
really?
A couple of guys I know, they spotted him and they followed him all the way to, and they wouldn't let him go. So and at the end of the night, he had to go home. He had to go somewhere. Or if he stopped, they would jump out of the car and, you know, get his number. You know, who knows what would happen to him. But they followed him. But finally, he went to where he was staying, the Democrat Party chairman's home, single-family home in Manchester. So they called the cops. The cops came and they said, open the trunk of your car. He opens the trunk of the car, and there's all the Republican signs, Republican Party, Republican candidates. And he goes, this is in a police report. Oh, let me go. I'm going back to South Dakota. I don't want a criminal record. Oh, please. You know, and they let him go. And we filed complaints. No one would prosecute him. So if you can't get prosecuted in New Hampshire, we're going to basically persecute you. So we put his name on the Internet. If you look up Jeff Witrowski, G-E-O-F-F, Witrowski, spelled like it sounds, what happened was I put so many articles about that creep on the Internet that a talk radio program from South Dakota called me and they said, Mr. Nail, you've called this guy a vote thief. And I said, yeah, he is. He's a no good, low life, dirtball vote thief. Yeah. They said, well,
tell us what you really think of the guy.
Yeah. This is justice called street justice. Well, the talk radio station person said, Well, he's Hillary Clinton's campaign manager here in South Dakota.
No kidding.
We're going to ask him. You know, they said we never had. This is when the primary with Obama. So it went on and on and on and on. It finally got to South Dakota. Some of these states that have primaries, it didn't matter. Their primary was over. You know, everything was settled. Well, now when Obama and Hillary went at it for so long, some of these states have never really had a primary that's in the news. And they were begging me to come out to South Dakota and debate him. I said, I don't want to come out there and debate him, but I said, I'll give you the assessment card for the home where he was staying. He says he was renting an apartment. He's not allowed to rent an apartment from a single family home in Manchester. You know, if the city finds out, you know, they're going to bag you for a zoning violation. So, and they're going to deny they rented him the room. I said, let's see, asking for a blank check. So instead of Jeff Watrosky being Hillary Clinton's famous, you know, like man on the scene campaign chairman for South Dakota, he spent the last week or two of the election answering my accusations over the phone to talk radio. So, you know, you take what justice you can get. So some of these people, when they go to get a job with another candidate in 2020 or 2024, whatever, somebody's going to look up their name and say, oh, Caitlin Inagaki, vote thief, you know, you're some spokesman. Yeah. So that's how we punish them. And that's all I have. I mean, I can't get help from the.
What's the worst they can do? I mean, where they fine you? It's a serious charge. What it's done by lots of people. So what's the state law? It is.
Well,
okay.
It's a fine and you can lose your right to vote. To commit voter fraud, you can lose your right to vote. And that would be harmful if you make your living working on campaigns. You know, if you make your living working as an Antifa like Carl Gibson, that gives you some street credibility. That guy that made the fake phone call about Yvonne Dean Bailey running for state rep, he made a fake phone call against General Electric. He made a fake news account and sent it out to the press. General Electric's, this was in 2011 or something like that, their stock went down $3 billion because he did a fake press release saying that they had to pay $3 or $4 billion in taxes that GM got back. Yeah, so this is the kind of dirty tricks they pull all over the country. And they know each other. Now, he's famous for wearing these giant foam green Hulk hands and chanting and getting arrested and drug out of like the Wisconsin state capitol and stuff. So that's what he does. And for him, getting arrested, street cred. Now he might actually go to jail in New Hampshire. I don't think he ever expected that. So we'll
that's
be very, very happy. Yeah. And we have a new attorney general. His name is Gordon McDonald. He's a straight arrow. And this is the first time we've had a good attorney general in a long, long time. So we're hoping that the new guy, Attorney General McDonald, will actually prosecute some of these people because it's undeniable. You know, they've committed voter fraud. Some of them admitted it. They got them. It doesn't take that much to prosecute these guys. I don't think they're going to get attorneys and fight over this. I think they're just going to get out of the state.
Hillary Clinton won New Hampshire by a pretty narrow margin, and there are four electoral votes in the state which went to Hillary. Mm-hmm. What was the difference? Was it about 4,000 or 5,000?
Yes, 3,500 or something like that. And Kelly Ayotte lost her seat by 1,117 votes or something. Now, here's the numbers. If you want to do some numbers, on November 8th of 2016, that was our election. That was a general election that Kelly Ayotte was in and Hillary Clinton and President Trump. In August of this year, our Speaker of the House asked the Secretary of State to do some checking on the 2016 election because we heard so many accusations of voter fraud. So the Secretary of State matched the people who voted same day on November 8th of 2016 on Election Day and with the Department of Safety's record of who got a driver's license. So 6,450 people voted in New Hampshire using an out-of-state driver's license. Okay?
Wow.
Now, August, that was November 8th of 2016, that election, 6,450 people. By August of next year, only 15% of those people actually gotten a New Hampshire driver's license. So you're going to tell me that 5,500 some people got rid of their car and don't have a driver's license anymore? Sure they do. Here's 8 or 9 months later, they don't have a New Hampshire driver's license. They are not a New Hampshire resident. They never were a New Hampshire resident. They came here. They stole a vote. I mean, with very, very few exceptions. You know, occasionally somebody's sold their home and are moving to New Hampshire. And they might have a driver's license from somebody else for a week or two. But, you know, when if you steal a driver's license from Massachusetts or Connecticut, you're a resident until you've abandoned your previous residence and say and sign something or get a driver's license or take some action in New Hampshire other than stealing a boat. You're still a resident or domicile in that other state, because when you get your driver's license, it says what is your legal address? You sign under penalty of perjury. I live at Cherry Hill Drive in New Jersey, and they give you the driver's license. And that's in other states with income taxes, unlike New Hampshire. If you're in a state with income tax, they track you for income taxes through your driver's license. And the next thing we get into when we start playing these games and not prosecuting non-resident voters, once these 6,450 people are on the checklist, they can get pulled for jury duty. Right? Now,
right.
We pick people on for jury duty in New Hampshire under federal request back in 1992, 1993. The federal government gave a directive to all 50 states to start picking their juries in a more equitable fashion, because we pick federal juries with the same system in the same way. So they said, we'd like you to do something a little more up to date rather than the guy down the selectman down the road picks six of his friends to be on jury duty. So we use what's called a blended list. It's supposed to be, let's say, half driver's licenses and half registered voters. Well, if you don't have a New Hampshire driver's license, how are you ever going to get picked for jury duty? And if you gave a fake address to vote here, how are you going to serve on jury duty? That letter's going to bounce back. So what we have multiple classes of voters. We have voters who live here and pay taxes, and we have voters who just come here and vote and leave. And that's what the Coalition of Hampshire Taxpayers is trying to stop that with every tool we have available. And it's talk radio, talking to state reps. And, we used to go to hearings and testify. That it's just almost a waste of time now. I have groups that I work with from other states, and currently there are national law firms that are looking at suing some of these states. And the California people have been approached. One of somebody we know in North Carolina has been approached, and I'm waiting myself. So what happens is firms that want to stop this or get some notoriety, say like we stop voter fraud in New Hampshire, would contact an activist and say, what do you have? And do we have enough to bring a civil rights suit? Because election law violations allowed by a state are a civil rights issue. It's the 14th Amendment. You can't have white voters and black voters and Chinese voters. You have to have everybody's got the same, right to vote, and their vote counts equally. One man, one vote. But when you have 6,000, here's the fun part: 6,450 people voted on election day in New Hampshire. But previous to that, we had a primary in February of that year, right?
Yes.
Between December 28th and our primary of 2015 and our primary, which was on February 9th, 78,000 people registered to vote in New Hampshire. Hillary Clinton's people were out registering the people to vote. Bernie Sanders' people, Donald Trump's people were registering to vote. We caught four Australians here. I worked with Project Veritas during the primary back in 2016, in February 2016. Project Veritas came to the state of New Hampshire to once again document voter fraud, and they called me up and said, would you like to work with us? So, I went out with the people that had the hidden cameras, and we worked on what we would ask election officials. And we had like 2 hours of really good evidence of voter fraud in New Hampshire. Great.
And we got about a minute left here, the quickest half hour in radio. Where could people, listening around the country, where would they go if they want to get some information about voter fraud, what they can do about it in their particular state or community? What would you recommend?
Go right to our website, CNHT, Coalition of the Hampshire Taxpayers, CNHT.org. And there's pictures of people. We put their pictures on our wall of shame. And there's stories in there and how we catch them and what we use for tips and evidence. And, we have people finder websites and whatnot. You get their birth date and go through all their records best we can. I haven't been wrong yet.
Well, Ed, thank you so much for being on, and I appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll catch up sometime in the near future.
We'll be making some news.
All righty. Excellent. You've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio on WBCQ The Planet. And until next week, may God bless you.